That's right. It is Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, coming at you on this Friday. Chase McCabe, Michelle Knezovic, and the reporter Nick Keyser hanging out with you at the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Studios. Hope you're having a fantastic start to your day. We've had spring weather. It's put us all in a good mood, and hopefully that can continue. Michelle, what's up?
I'm doing great this morning. It's a Friday, Chase. We've got the NBA playoffs. We've got the NHL playoffs. I'm looking at a picture right now of my cousin just had a baby, and they're huge Rangers fans, and she is about 2 months old, and her name is Mia, and she is decked out in Rangers gear with my aunt, and it is the cutest thing ever. So
shout out to Mia and the Rangers. And I got to give – I was going to do this when we talked more in depth about the playoffs, but I know he's probably still lurking in the building. So I will say this where Robbie Stanley can hear it. He was 100% right. Mm-hmm. I said I thought that the New Jersey Devils would tie the series up, that this would be more of a series, and he texted me when I said that. I was like, no, the Rangers are a wagon, and they showed it last night that they are. Patrick Kane, that dude, like, say what you want about him. I know Preds fans don't like him and all of that, but that goal he scored last night, I was just like, I hate people like that because it's so ridiculous.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Rangers are legit.
Oh yes, they are, Chase. I mean, we were talking about it yesterday. I remember – you know, we were like, oh, the Devils didn't really show up. But then I made the point of, well, Patrick Kane, you know, he wasn't even that much of a factor in that first game. But woo, last night he was, and the Rangers look darn good. I'll throw out a called shot I had this morning on Caller Shot Friday with Robbie and Rex Road. The Rangers will sweep two of their playoff series.
Whoa. Mm-hmm. So you got to say two of them.
I said two. So pull like an Avs from last year. So the Avs, they.
So if they come out of this one, they get.
Either the Hurricanes or the Islanders.
Ooh. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know if I can.
Well, it doesn't have to be that one.
No, but I mean, still, they'd have to get through Toronto or Tampa at some point, or Boston.
Correctamundo.
Yeah, there's a lot. There's the East is tough. It's rambunctious there in the East. I mean, the talent is fruitful, as they like to say. but let's start with this. The S2 testing that we have discussed, and I'm going to be 100% honest with you. I don't get into all of that and knowing exactly what it is, but I know Rex Rowe did an article about it, and he's going to join us a little bit later to talk more about that. But the reports have come out that Bryce Young did the best with like a 97% and CJ Stroud did the worst with an 18%. And that is why you're seeing him start to fall. And maybe he doesn't go top two like we initially thought. And, you know, I'm of the old school. I've been around a lot of old school football people that they tell me the eye test. But, you know, reading this stuff and learning a little bit more about it and what goes into it, it's more than the Wonderlic test. That there are cognitive things that they test with the S2 testing that does concern me a little bit if you're a team that's interested in CJ Stroud.
Yeah, Chase. So this came out this morning by Bob McGinn on golongtd.com. Bob McGinn is a reporter. He covered the Packers for years. Really established journalist. This came out this morning. Actually, it was a story on Bryce Young's S2 advantage and his S2 score. And basically what came out this morning was that multiple sources told Bob McGinn that Young scored a 98%, so 98 percentile out of 100, and CJ Stroud scored an 18%, so 18 percentile. Let's also keep in mind, too, that the S2 test is something that NFL teams are required to pay. They're required to pay for the S2 testing, which then allows them to access prospect scores. So these numbers are supposed to be lock and key. There's rumblings of, you know, this person did well.
We know that always happens.
Yes, yeah, of course. But these ones were, you know, specifically only supposed to go to the teams that, you know, pay for this this specific test. And this surfaced earlier this morning, and the Football and Other F Words podcast actually put it out there, and that's where we initially saw this report. And, you know, we wanted to make sure that it was correct coming from a legitimate journalist. And, you know, sure enough, two multiple sources said Bob McGinn, he didn't name names, but NFL execs said that these were the scores. And, you know, one said that that's a big red flag for CJ Stroud's and that they wouldn't even take a look at him. So, I mean, it's really going to be fascinating to see what all comes of this, Chase. I mean, this only came out just a couple of hours ago. This article was posted on golongtd.com, which is a free article to read. Yeah. And it really is fascinating because, you know, Joe's talked a lot about S2 testing, and I didn't know much about it until he really brought it up. And a lot of us know what the Wonderlic is. It's completely different, and it's essentially a test that it's a brain test. So think of, like, you're running the 40, you're at the combine, but it's for your brain. And it tests the way you process things, you know, the way you can focus on something specific with other things trying to distract you. So you think about how this could benefit somebody who's looking to be a quarterback in the NFL of reading defenses or being able to, you know, focus on connecting with your wide receiver while you're getting blitzed or along those lines, or able to process, make a play in the moment and things like that. And we know some of the current NFL players who are in the league, because once you are on a specific team, I think then, I'm not 100% sure, but, you know, if you have the score, your score, or you get it from your agent or you ask what it is, I think you yourself can release it. So, you know, Joe Burrow was one of the ones who got a 97. He actually took it at LSU when he was in college. So he was one of them. You know, Justin Fields scored really high on that. Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes. So we've seen some of, you know, the current NFL players and what type of quarterbacks they are in the league right now, and can compare it to what they scored on this specific test. Do I think it's everything? No. I mean, nothing is everything, right? Arm strength is not everything. You know, how you performed in college is not everything. Your physique is not everything. We've seen that. I think that's been proven over the last couple of years, just seeing different quarterbacks emerge. It's not always the top guy. It's often not the top guy who emerges. Hey,
I've proven for 35 years that my physique is not everything. So. All good.
But, you know, this has become a test that was started by two neuroscientists actually here in Nashville. So a local connection there. And they originally, you know, studied Alzheimer's, the brain, right? And now have kind of created this to help teams evaluate quarterbacks. Is it everything? No. Does it play a role into evaluating somebody? Sure. I mean, everything plays a role. But I don't know if we've seen a successful elite quarterback in the league currently who hasn't done well on it or hasn't released a score that they didn't do well. Because I know, like, Drew Brees went back and did it. He did very well on it.
And that doesn't surprise me. Yeah. Like that, I'm glad you brought that up, because you can name, like, a quarterback of the past that we know how their career turned out. And then as soon as you said Drew Brees, I'm like, I bet he did well. It just, for some reason, that seems, I would imagine Brady or Manning or.
Oh, yeah.
I'd be very curious on, give me, like, the top 20 quarterbacks of the last 20 years and have them do it and see. Now, you can argue that, okay, they're older now, and so, they're obviously, they've aged.
Yeah, they've
their
aged.
Brains have changed and all of that, but I still think, like, somebody like Drew Brees doesn't shock me at all. But I'm curious of one, how much teams are going to factor this in, because, you know, we could be having this conversation right now, Michelle, and CJ Stroud still goes, you know, 2 overall.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, for sure.
And that wouldn't surprise me. But, you know, how are teams looking at this? How are they weighing it in? It feels like this, you know, may be replacing the Wonderlic test in some ways. And so, and furthermore, how much do the fans care about this? Like, if you're hearing all these rumors of the Titans moving up to 3 or 2 to take a quarterback, and you know that CJ Stroud could be in play, but you're hearing all this testing stuff that he didn't do well. How much does that concern you about them taking him? And if he does fall and you stay at 11 and he's there at 11, do you touch him?
Well, and that's and
or are we going to see a situation where he just spirals?
Well, and that's the thing, Chase, is this is not this is new information to us, but this is not new information to the executives, the general manager.
Sure, but I'm asking the fans. You know, like our question, and I'm going to put it on Twitter. Like,
yeah.
How much do the fans care about it?
No, yeah, I would love to hear. You know, how much do you think this plays a role? And you know, looking at the Tennessee Titans, they were traditionally an organization that didn't lean heavy on using analytics to play a role in which players they took in the draft or anything really. I mean, getting Rand Carthon as the general manager, he's a younger guy. They used analytics a bit in San Francisco, and they obviously just got the S2 testing here in Tennessee with their organization. They now pay for it. So it's something that traditionally maybe they haven't used. You know, when Mike Vrabel was playing in the league, it wasn't something they used. Technology has come so far now. So it's a different mindset. But it's interesting, too, because you watch what C.J. Stroud did in his last college game, and he absolutely balled out against the best team in the country. So
right.
You can't take that completely away. You can't take what he's done on the field completely away. But there's something that just doesn't add up when you look at here's the product that he put out there on every Saturday this fall versus, okay, something just seems a little bit off here and doesn't click.
Right. Well, I've put the Twitter question up at 1025 the game. How much do you care? Do you care about S2 testing when it comes to draft evaluation? Simple yes or no. So you can vote in our poll on that. You can also text 615-737-1025. That's our phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. This is something that we will visit throughout the show. Joe Rexroad going to join us at 10. We'll even ask Chris Sanders at 10:30 because I'm curious of his answer. Obviously, this wasn't around when he was coming out of Ohio State. And into the NFL. So we'll do that. But coming up next, we'll have our final conversation for a while with the president and CEO of the Predators, Sean Henry, put a bow on things. We'll do that next here on Chase and Michelle, 1025, 1063, the game. Come out to Bridgestone Arena tomorrow at 2 for the Nashville Predators open house. The open house will include tours of the Preds locker room, the Lexus Lounge, team store, and the chance to shoot on net to win 2 lower level full season tickets for next season. You can get more details at nashvillepredators.com/open house. Chase and Michelle, 1025, 1063 the game. Chase McKay, Michelle Knezovic, the reporter Nick Keiser with you. Should be joined by Sean Henry here in just a few minutes to wrap up our weeklies with him, at least for a little while. But I also want to tell you about our draft coverage that will begin next Thursday night at Twin Peaks and also continue next Friday night at the Wingstop in Inglewood, located at 3300 Gallatin Pike, where flavor gets its wings. That's with Caroline Fenton, Derek Mason, and Chris Sanders on location. And the first 100 people to stop by during the draft will receive a free coupon for 5 free boneless wings for their next visit. So be sure to check that out and join us for that. So I can't believe it's a week away. I hope that it's exciting for Titans fans, and I think that it probably will be moving forward, Michelle. I have a feeling this time next week we're going to be talking about something interesting when it comes to the Titans.
Yeah, Chase. I mean, we put percentages this morning, Robbie, Joe, and I, on the likelihood we think they would draft a quarterback. I put 57.
I put 57%
they draft a quarterback. You know?
Now, how did you see? Okay, one thing that you may have learned about me, I like numbers like that, like not like 50 or 75 or whatever. So how did you come up with 57?
Well, based off of the evaluation process and having, you know, a couple of the prospects, Anthony Richardson, Will Levis, Hendon Hooker, all come and visit here. The meetings that they had, Mike Vrabel going to Ohio State, some of the reports coming out through ESPN with Diana Rossini yesterday saying that, you know, the Tennessee Titans, I don't know if they'll move up, but they're definitely doing their due diligence on all of these quarterbacks and evaluating them. They're sitting at 11. They have a new general manager. And then Dane Brugler saying that they've made calls from picks 2 to 6. So I think, you know, compiling a lot of that information, and yes, I understand that we're in the time of year where there's a lot of different information ever flowing around, but I think just based off of those three things off the top of my mind, that I give it more than 50%. That's why I give it more than 50%.
Look, I don't think you're wrong. I mean, it's like yesterday, or 2 days ago, whenever it was, we said I'd be more surprised at this point if they didn't take one.
Mm-hmm.
Just because of all the smoke that's out there. Now, again, it's lying season. We don't know Rand Carthon very well and how he's going to operate when it comes to the draft. So, Mike Vrabel, we think is a little more involved in this than maybe he has been in the past, but we don't know 100%. So there is a bit of a smokescreen, but I think it's pretty obvious. They've gone to pro days. They've had guys in to visit. They are doing their due diligence on quarterback. And if they feel like one of these guys, because you can't just go, you're not just going to draft one of these guys to see what happens. You're drafting one of these guys to be your next guy, to be your franchise quarterback, to be something that you have not been able to truly find since Steve McNair left. And that is your guy for the next, 8 to 10 years. They've tried and they've missed. Jake Locker, Marcus Mariota, we can go up, Vince Young, we can go up and down the line with that. That they've had flashes, but they've never been able to find the guy.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about this draft class is we all kind of sit here and go, I don't know if any of these guys are the guy. Bryce Young might be. Up until like a week ago, I think people thought CJ Stroud might be, but it's really hard to say. And even looking ahead to next year, right now you say Drake May and Caleb Williams, but you don't know for sure.
Yeah.
And that's the gamble in all of it. But for Rand Carthon, you cannot get this wrong. This is, if you go quarterback, and you, especially if you trade up to get quarterback in your first draft and you miss, it's going to cost you your job sooner rather than later. And I think he knows that. That's a part of the game. But and you don't get many second chances as a GM like you do a coach. So I think he's putting his homework in.
Yeah, and you know, when you look at the general manager position in really any sport, but specifically the NFL, hitting on a quarterback and getting an elite quarterback in your organization is detrimental. I mean, look at the Chiefs organization. The fact that they drafted Patrick Mahomes, your GM's sitting nice for a while, because when you have a Patrick Mahomes, when you have a Joe Burrow, when you have a Josh Allen, when you have an elite quarterback and you are winning, that's what matters in this sport. You know, you can afford then, once you have your guy at quarterback, to miss on some other players because your team doesn't have to be perfect around him. Do you want to miss on them? No, you want to hit on every single player, but is that realistic? No. If you have the ability to hit on a quarterback, you know, it changes things for your organization. You don't have to look at this team and think, okay, if Ryan Tannehill is our starting quarterback, we need to do everything in our power to have incredible depth and a lot of skill at a majority of the positions around him, you know, that be great around Ryan Tannehill. But when you get a guy like a Patrick Mahomes, you can lose your best wide receiver in Tyreek Hill, one of the best in the NFL, and still go and win a Super Bowl. When you get a Joe Burrow, you can still go to the Super Bowl with one of the worst offensive lines in the NFL. These things are possible, and that's the ultimate goal at the end of the day. So when we talk about drafting a quarterback, and people might look at this team and think, well, they have so many other needs right now. I'm with you. I agree that they have so many other needs right now. That's not a surprise to anybody. And a lot of other teams around the league have so many other holes to fill. But when you can hit on that quarterback, it changes things for your organization. It allows you to be in a different category when you find your elite quarterback.
So here's the, you bring up Patrick Mahomes, and the thing about that is, like, to me, I give Andy Reid all the credit there. Andy Reid saw something in him, and I remember you know, the late Floyd Reese was obviously with us then on our draft coverage, and he was high on that pick and on Andy's evaluation of him and knew that Andy was the right guy to develop him. Mike Vrabel is a defensive-minded coach. He has put a lot of work into the offensive side of the ball this year. You know, he's brought – Tim Kelly's going to be the offensive coordinator. Tim Kelly did a fine job with Deshaun Watson in mm-hmm. Houston. We saw that. Charles London has come in to kind of be a quarterback guru. So that's why that adds to my thought of, okay, they might actually do this. They're going to have to develop the guy. And so, you know, Patrick Mahomes, the moment he walked across the stage, nobody was thinking he was going to be a Hall of Fame quarterback like he now is with two Super Bowl rings on his hand. So it's going to take a little time. They're going to have to develop him.
Yeah, I mean, Chase, 100%. And Matt Nagy, the offensive coordinator at the Chiefs during that time, you know, a name we brought up about potentially coming here when they were looking to fill that position. I mean, he saw something in Patrick Mahomes and quite literally gave him the playbook. So when Patrick Mahomes interviewed with Andy Reid, he knew all the answers.
Yeah.
So, yes, Andy Reid was such an offensive mind, and then in combination with Patrick's skills, they were able to become this, you know, historic duo we're already seeing only a couple of years into his tenure in the league. But you find that guy and the game changes.
Yeah, absolutely. It does. So, again, less than a week away from the first round. Woo! I can't wait. I'm so ready.
Oh, me too.
To get it done. All right, Sean Henry is going to join us. He's going to do that coming up next. He got caught up a little bit, so he's going to punch in. Coming up here on Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chase McKay, Michelle Knezovic, the reporter Nick Keiser hanging out with you. Let's say hello to the president and CEO of the Nashville Predators, Sean Henry, who has joined us every week, and it's been a lot of fun. And unfortunately, the season has come to a close, but you know what? The future looks bright. Sean, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. You know what? I loved your last line, hated your first one, but the future is bright, no doubt about that.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. Like, you've been around this game a long time, and you know, I've covered the game for a long time, and there are times where you go to the end of season press conference and you know, you don't feel good when you walk away, but I felt good when I walked out of there Monday. You know, we all celebrated David Poyle, as he put it, he gave the keys to Barry Trotz, and even though I think we use you know, key fobs and key cards and stuff now, but he handed those over to Trotzy, and you know, Barry's got a lot to work with. 13 draft picks that he can make in Nashville coming up in June. And also, you know, who knows what else might happen between now and then. So I know I felt really good walking out of there. How about you?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I've missed the playoffs, I think, six, maybe seven times, and which I'm pretty fortunate to only missed it that many times. But all the other times, you were a little down, and you're like, you know, what if, what if, what if? And rarely did you look forward to say, okay, what could be next? You know, even at the time when I was in Tampa, we had the number one pick and got Steven Stamkos. Mm-hmm. Even then, you weren't that enthusiastic about what could happen just 6 months down the road, as opposed to this time. I mean, you look at the core veterans that went down. I mean, the number of games missed is, I've never seen anything like it. Heck, David Poyle's been in this league over 50 years. And like you said, he's never seen a team riddled with injuries that way. But it gave us the opportunity to give guys a chance probably a year before anyone thought they would. And they sure did shine. I mean, there were a couple, two, three guys that you realized they're ready, you know, or, you know, you're going to make roster decisions hard next year. And then you get back a couple 40-goal scorers, get back our Norris Trophy winner, you know, 100-point guy last year or close to it, and you layer that on top of those guys. You have 23 picks over the next 2 years, and that's 3 years' worth of picks just right in 2 years. So it's, yeah, it's really, really exciting. And yeah, you saw it throughout the entire city. You know, it was a year that started spectacularly. We had the best training camp I think I've ever been around for. Went over to Europe on the international stage, come back undefeated. You think you're going to go 82-0, and obviously, you know, life gets in the way. But we also get a chance to finish the season with the NHL awards and the draft. Mm-hmm. You know, what a nice bookend of a season.
Yeah. So that's going to be fantastic in June. Looking forward to that. But I kind of laughed because Friday night, the organization and the players did a very awesome job honoring David Poyle in his last game as general manager. And it what made me laugh was this year, and obviously there will be more for David, you've honored two people that probably hate talking about themselves the most. One gets a statue in Pecorine, and then David Poyle, he said it on Monday that he didn't know what to do with his hands, and it just he has always made it about other people and rarely about himself. But that was a really special moment Friday night, watching the players go over to the corner where he is and raise their sticks to their GM.
Yeah, it really was cool, and you hit it right on the head. David wants to talk about himself as much as I want to clean up my dog's droppings. He just hates it. I mean, he recoils from it. And even when I told him, hey, this is what we're going to do tonight, he's like, well, I don't think we have to. And once he realizes that it's important to everybody, our fans, our employees, our players, media. I mean, he's just been so good to so many people. And he was funny on Monday when he talked about that exact hand comment, which I thought was really, really funny. But then next year we're going to have an opportunity in our 25th anniversary season to really focus and celebrate on the guy that, if it weren't for him, we're not celebrating 25 years. So, for me, I've had the good pleasure of working with him for 14 seasons, get a chance to work with him for years to come as he'll be an advisor and a consultant, just a resource. And I'm thankful for that. But what he's done for me in my career, I can't thank him enough. But like you and Michelle and everyone else that ever met him, it'll be fun to really have a focused day or week to celebrate David. And just like we did with Pekka a year ago, everyone wanted to know what we're doing next. And he said, just sit back and watch and wait. It'll be fun. It'll be special. But his career deserves a real focused celebration for his family, his friends, and all the careers he's touched and molded.
Well said, Sean. Sean Henry, Preds CEO and president, is on with us right now. Sean, you hosted your first real event at F&M Bank Arena last Thursday after the tragic loss in the helicopter crash at Fort Campbell. How important for you all was it that the Bank Arena was somewhere that community could go and be together during a time of such tragedy there?
Well, it's funny, Mayor Durrett, who really his vision to build the arena. We first started talking about just building an ice rink, mm-hmm. and obviously it grew and grew. The man's such a leader. But he, like you said, Clarksville deserves a place to get together and celebrate, get together and cheer and hug a stranger. And that was the vision. That's what we always thought about. But just like Bridgestone Arena, it kind of becomes town hall. And we never thought the first event we would have would be a memorial service. I'm sure glad we were able to open it early. And, when those nine servicemen, fell tragically in that accident, the whole community hurt. And it was nice to be able to kick the doors open. And I think we had, 4,000 people there, and mostly men and women in the service, obviously their families. And it was so somber, but it was also joyful. And I know that sounds odd going together, but I was really pleased that we were able to do it. Again, we opened early. But the connection that community has with the military because of Fort Campbell and the shadow it casts, mm-hmm. It might be the most important event we ever do there. It won't be the most fun, no doubt about that, mm-hmm. but it will be the most important one. So, again, give all the credit in the world to Mayor Durrett. He is a visionary, just like we talk about Mayor Bredesen today with his vision of Bridgestone Arena. 25 years from now, we're going to look back on his thought about building that arena. And a lot of people didn't agree with him initially. But after one event, people realize what it could mean for that community. And I think, there'll be, more and more events, hopefully a lot more happy events. Mm-hmm. But when the community needs it, it'll be there to serve as a place to get together and mourn and hug on each other.
And the F&M Bank Arena, the grand opening in Clarksville will be this summer. So that's something to keep an eye out for. But you guys have coming up this Friday evening an open house on Saturday, an open house, 2 to 5, featuring some behind-the-scene tours. You're going to get to see the Nashville locker room discounts and half-off concessions. What can people expect, Sean, from some of the behind-the-scenes? I know you've been in every single area of that arena. What is something that somebody who's maybe thinking of attending this weekend, they can expect in Bridgestone?
Well, it's just fun, first and foremost. It's let's get together, and we talked about how excited and positive we are about next season. It's an opportunity, to look in the places that you only hear about, maybe see some video clips here or there. A chance to walk through the locker room is always really, really, really cool. We all probably take it for granted a little bit, being in there a little bit more often. But I always look back, myself and think, what would 12-year-old Sean Henry think if he could walk into a locker room for an NHL team? So you have that. You have a chance to, I think, win season tickets by shooting on goal from some incredible distance, but hopefully somebody wins. That's always a good thing. Get a chance to pick up some souvenirs at a pretty deep discount. And, you know, for a lot of our fans that are going to come on out, it's a chance to almost say goodbye for a few months. And our fan base, they're family. They really are. And like I say, I always love our training camps, you know, when they're open and you see people get back together for the first time in 2, 3, 4, 5 months. In this case, really one of the longer off seasons you've had in recent memory. But it's just a fun day. It really, really is. And, you know, we'll have a few of them. I think we're painting the ice as well. You have a chance to put a message down on the ice, whether it be, you know, to a loved one that's not with you any longer, or your expression for the team, or Pekka, or David, or whatever it may be. It's just a fun way. And how often do you get a chance to, you know, get on your hands and knees on the ice of an NHL team and paint the message? And it really is one of those fun days. I'm sad I won't be there. I'm traveling for some meetings over the next 4 or 5 days, so I'm going to miss that. But it's one of my favorite events of the year. So I hope you two have fun.
No doubt. I mean, the open houses are always fun, and to be able to shoot on net to potentially win season tickets, I mean, that is awesome. I don't think I'm eligible for that, but I think somebody else would really, really enjoy that. But
I'm also very clumsy.
I've seen you shoot. Chase, I've seen you shoot. You're eligible to win. We have nothing to worry about.
Hey, I hit one from goal to goal one time with nothing in the way, but, you know, hey.
I saw you drop a puck out of your hand and almost miss the ground, man. We're okay.
Thank you
Between
for your
Chase
confidence.
And I out there, it would just be a very scary scene. I'd probably fall.
Yeah, I would fall. Let's be honest. I'd wind up, try and do it like Shea Weber, and then just fall.
Yeah, so, it's funny. Maybe not funny. The very first time we did this, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, whatever it was, an older woman went out. She was the very first one to do it, and she did. She just her feet went over her head.
Oh goodness!
I was like, oh my gosh, my first promotion, and you know we're going to get sued. And fortunately, she was okay, and I think she enjoyed some fun things from us. But I really did think, oh, the first shot's our last one ever.
Well, I'm glad that it wasn't for sure. But Sean, I know you know we're gonna talk to you here in maybe in a month or so as the off season gets underway and get closer to the awards and the draft. But appreciate doing these weeklies with you. It's been fun to kind of get an insight of the organization and just talk. So it's been really cool. But appreciate it, and we'll be talking very, very soon.
Yes.
Well, I appreciate both of you guys, Uncle Junie and Nick. That's the worst part about the season being over. You know, you're not gonna have me on anymore. Except maybe once a month for a check-in. But I do look forward to picking this back up in the fall. And I really do appreciate you guys, you know, bringing volume to some of the fun things we do and maybe some of the important things too. So thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks,
we
Sean.
Enjoy our partnership with the Nashville Predators. For sure. Have a great weekend. Sean Henry, the president and CEO of the Nashville Predators, joining us as putting a bow on things. And again, that open house tomorrow, 2 to 5. At Bridgestone Arena. Also, I think tonight they're having a thing for season ticket citizens where you can select your
mm-hmm.
seats.
So, yes.
A lot of cool off-season things going on with the Nashville Predators. Coming up, Michelle Knezovic texted this morning and she said, I have a rant. I have something I have to get off my chest. I don't think it's about straws like mine was yesterday.
No, sports-related.
It is sports-related, but we will do that next here on Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
She can be fiery when you make her mad.
Are you kidding? I'm working.
It's Michelle's turn for the red rant.
Look, you can't pull me out of this right now.
Oh, we even got the red rant intro. I like it. Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Join Robbie Stanley from 10 to noon tomorrow for another Kubota field event at the Coleman Tractor in White House. For their biggest sales event of the year, demo Kubota tractors, zero-turn mowers, and more. That's Coleman Tractor of White House, located at 3613 Highway 31 West this Saturday. All right, so as I said, Michelle texted us this morning. She put it on the grid. I have a rant today about something, and it's with the NBA. Mm-hmm. So without further ado, Michelle, take it away.
Thank you, Chase. I appreciate it. The intro was absolutely perfect. That was Nick's idea to get me all fired up this morning. But, you know, if you've been listening to Chase and I the last couple of days, obviously the NBA finals the NBA playoffs are going on right now. The whole Draymond Green situation, I've been very vocal about that. I believe it was an unfair punishment. I agree with, you know, the refs giving him a flagrant 2 after him and Sabonis got in a little bit of a scuffle. He grabbed Draymond's leg, and then Draymond went ahead and stomped on Sabonis' chest. They throw him out, but then, you know, as media is circulating and as the playoffs are continuing to happen, then news comes out that, okay, Draymond will miss game three. That game was last night. Last night, which also happened, and honestly, I fell asleep and didn't see this live in time, but just saw it circulating on Twitter this morning and on ESPN, was the 76ers and the Nets, which I haven't been paying too much attention to the series because the 76ers are
going to
sweep
the end
Nets.
Of it. It was a good game last night.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, really good game.
But the unfortunate part of it is that people aren't talking much about the game. They're talking about these incidences. Wow, I just said that all wild. These events that happened during the game, the first being Joel Embiid, you know, getting caught up and then him laying on the floor and directly kicking a Nets player directly in the groin and only receiving a flagrant one foul. Then later in the game, we see James Harden dribbling. He kind of puts his arm out, tries to push off, but definitely hits his defender, you know, in the lower stomach, groin area as well. He ends up getting a flagrant two and ejected. And this is what I was talking about before earlier this week in refs viewing players and media and fans viewing players in certain ways. Draymond right. Green getting ejected from the game, which I agree, what he did, not okay. But then also getting another suspension on top of it, missing game three in the postseason, I think is completely, you know, not right. I think, you know, when Rudy Gobert a couple weeks ago lunges across a huddle and tries to punch one of his teammates in the face, that's warranted a game suspension. I don't think what Draymond did in the midst of a game is warranted a game suspension in the postseason. Do I agree with that? It was a flagrant two and he should have been ejected in the moment. Yes, I do. You know, now we flip over to the 76ers, Joel Embiid and the MVP conversation, never really been talked about as a dirty player or viewed as, you know, in quotes, the villain directly. And you can go find the video on Twitter directly.
And I think we have the audio of the play that we're talking about with Embiid.
Yeah, let's go to the audio here real quick.
He'll come the other way. Mikal Bridges. Oh, my goodness. Oh, and Claxton, and down goes both of the players.
It looked like, did Embiid trip Claxton? Because it looked like he was looking over him. What a pass here from Bridges to Claxton. Look at the stare down. It's kind of hard to tell there. There's the finish. And there's the stare down and the step over.
Ooh. Looked like one of the Rockettes with that kick.
Wow. See, Embiid, he took offense to this. The stepping over right there. Well, hey.
Looked like one of the Rockettes with that kick, Chase. Laying on the ground, directly kicking somebody in the groin, being a male. I mean, I can't speak to that, but I know you and Nick can. I mean, that was a dirty play. That was such a dirty play, and he stays in the game. He gets a flagrant one. Tell me if Draymond did that, would he not be kicked out and suspended
for another
game? He'd
be gone for three games.
Yeah.
If Draymond did that. It's inconsistency.
And in these games, it is the NBA playoffs. The narrative should be about how exciting and, you know, Devin Booker going off and having 40-plus points or, you know, I don't know, the Kings giving the Warriors a run for their money and in all of these different storylines, not officiating that's inconsistent and biased towards certain players. And I understand Draymond has acted this way and has a past, but I also too believe that, you know, in game when he does something that's okay, not okay, sure, eject him from the game. I agree with that, But to add another game suspension and to have something in the same playoffs happen that I believe was way worse and a guy not even get ejected? Not even get a flagrant two?
Yeah.
I just think that was ridiculous.
I 100% agree with you. And that's like, okay, so there's two things in play here. I understand that physicality is going to go up in the playoffs.
Of course.
And there has to be from a ref's point of view, and I've never been an official. I would love to get a former NBA official on the show and talk about this, if we can do that. That would be, I think, really compelling. Mm-hmm. You know, I know some NHL ones, and it's kind of the same conversation. But there is a sense, especially if you have a veteran official, about letting him play, that there has to be a little bit of okay, maybe I blow the whistle in the regular season on a certain call that I wouldn't in the postseason. I understand that, and I'm okay with that. But when it's blatant, when it's flagrant, when it's you're kicking a dude in the family jewels, okay, like throw him out. Like that's not cool. Not only are you breaking NBA rules, you're breaking bro code. That is not okay. And you know the Draymond situation, he's polarizing. There, that one is always going to be split down the middle. Again, we said it the other day. You look at the play, and he's jumping. He's trying to get out of it. Yes, he probably could have prevented from stepping on the guy or stomping on the guy, and they threw him out, and they should have. I don't agree with the suspension. I think he had served the punishment or served for the crime at that point. But that's whatever. But kicking a dude like that is not okay, and it just once again shows the inconsistencies in officiating, not just in the NBA.
I mean, go on Twitter right now and type into your search bar, Joel Embiid kick. I mean, Claxton goes up for a shot, it was an alley-oop. Claxton falls down, Joel Embiid falls down. He goes to just step over his ankles to walk to the other side of the court. As he has one leg stepping over Joel Embiid on the ground, he kicks his leg up directly in that area. And then immediately tries to stand up and act like, oh, did anybody see that? Hope not. Like, that is not cool. And I agree with you, Chase. It's not only dirty and, I believe, a flagrant two. You know, what? Put the insert flagrant two definition, and I'm sure this play needs to be something that is right there. But bro code and just dirty on so many levels, like, I want to hurt you. The intention to hurt you is there.
Yeah, and that's what it was. So, good rant. I agree with you 100% on that. Unfortunately, I don't know if things are going to change. But, again, I this is giving me an idea. I think I know a good official that could be polarizing to get on from the National Hockey League. So, that could be fun. But it's something that needs to change. I just don't know that it ever will. But We will certainly.
And really quick, right, in the MVP conversation, he's not going to get a suspension.
No, probably not.
Nope.
Coming up next, we'll get back into the S2 testing and how important that is. Joe Rexroad, who has studied it, who has written about it, obviously from our morning show, will join us to discuss that also. Thanks to G-Pander on Twitter, you can now see the GIF of me trying to ice skate from about 3 years ago. So enjoy that on our
Incredible.
Twitter page. But yes, you're welcome for that. That's all ahead here on Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.